On Friday, beloved listeners, the Italian president, Sergio Mattarella, finally approved the coalition government of two very different political parties, the anti-establishment Five Star Movement and the far-right League. At this prospect of an unlikely coalition taking power in Italy, financial markets in Europe and everywhere else went into one of their panics, and the Financial Times, their big read on Italian politics at the end of the week, was headlined, Italy's new government, Europe on edge after palace takeover. Now, who does LNL call when Europe is on edge? It has to be, as I said, my very favourite former finance minister for Greece, Yanis Varoufakis, co-founder of DiEM25, Democracy in Europe Movement. The last time we chatted was in relation to his book, Adults in the Room, My Battle with Europe's Deep Establishment. Yanis, welcome back. It's great to have you again.
It's always good to be back, Philip.
Yanis, you were described by Bloomberg as a very divisive figure. Perhaps we should terminate the interview.
Well, you are a very divisive figure in Australian media and politics more generally, so I think we are well matched, aren't we, Philip?
Let's deal with the latest news and work back. On Sunday, your favourite politicians, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, has rejected the new Italian government's plea for debt relief, a pretty typical response from Europe's deep establishment.
Well, that's not what is outrageous, because in a sense, the five-star movement's demand for writing off $250 billion that the central bank has purchased of Italian debt bonds, that was a kind of furphy, really. It was never meant as a serious proposition by the Cinque Stelle, the five-star movement. It was a bit of a provocation on their part. What was outrageous, however, was what Mrs. Merkel did yesterday, which is effectively to execute, just to wipe out completely every single one of President Emmanuel Macron's very moderate proposals for reforming the Eurozone, so that countries like Italy could remain sustainably within it, independently of who is in government in Rome. That rejection was absolutely astounding yesterday.
You were quite close to Macron when you were finance minister. What do you think of his plan?
Too little, too meager, too late. In the right direction. If you look at what Macron was saying, and it's issues that we have discussed together years ago, and where we agree. Look, Italy cannot be sustained within a monetary union without having some mechanism by which to allow surpluses from the north to be recycled to the south. For instance, Australia. Tasmania is always going to have a higher unemployment rate than Canberra or New South Wales. And you have a system that's called the federal government and the federal budget, which uses taxes raised in the richer states in Australia in order to fund unemployment insurance in places like Tasmania, to fund roads in Tasmania. And that is not just philanthropy towards Tasmanians. It is the only way that the Australian Federation can survive. So Macron was simply pointing out that if we want to keep Europe together and the Eurozone together, there have to be these mechanisms for recycling deficits and surpluses. So he proposed very moderate. I mean, my critique of the Macron proposals was that they were too moderate, in the sense that even if Merkel agreed to his proposals, the amount of money that would be spent in the periphery, in the Tasmanians of Europe, would be too little to play the stabilizing role which is necessary. But at least they were in the right direction. And what does Mrs. Merkel do? She says nine to all these very moderate proposals.
Would that have come as a great shock to Macron?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to him for more than a year now. It shouldn't. I mean, I was telling him, I was prognosticating glumly, that unless he had a credible threat that would go along with his moderate proposals, a threat of what he would do like, for instance, vetoing everything that happened in the EU unless these moderate proposals were accepted, there was no chance that Angela Merkel would have accepted them, simply because after 10 years of procrastinating, now she's the weakest chancellor that Germany has ever had. Angela Merkel was an almighty, extremely powerful chancellor a few years ago. But through this procrastination, she has created an economic subsidence and a political crisis, even in Germany, that has stolen away from her power. And look, the populist government in Italy today, if you want to think it this way, is the logical consequence of those 10 years of gross mismanagement of the Eurozone.
As Greek finance minister, you wanted to reform the Eurozone, but your policies were rejected as being destructive.
It is quite interesting, Philip, that there was a fascinating bifurcation. Behind closed doors, when I was talking to my German counterpart, the imperious Wolfgang Schäuble, when I was talking to Christine Lagarde, who used to be the finance minister of France and now is the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, when I was talking to the people, the good people in the European Central Bank, like the vice, one of the top notch of the board of directors of the European Central Bank, Benoît Cœuré, the Frenchman, even Mario Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank, not one of them behind closed doors told me that my plans, my proposals, either for Greece or for the European Union, were wrong or undesirable. Not one of them. Either they agreed with what I was proposing or they were nodding while looking at me in sympathy. But what was happening was, in the meetings of the finance ministers, and especially in press conferences, I was being dismissed as a recalcitrant, as simply someone who did not want to play by the rules, given, however, that, you know, the great irony was that these rules had already been completely sidelined by themselves. They were making them the rules as they were going along. So if you want, this incongruity, this complete contrast between what was going on behind closed doors and what was being said in public is, if you want, a marker for the kind of political and economic degeneracy of the European Union.
Yiannis, let's go back to Italy. Some pundits have blamed the populist revolt on anti-immigrant feeling amongst Italians. You're not entirely convinced.
No, I'm absolutely, totally and entirely unconvinced. If you look at the asphyxiation of the median family, this asphyxiation now has been happening in Italy for 20 years. Italy was never designed as an economy to be part of this Eurozone. Italy is much closer to Japan than it is to Germany, to Spain, to France, to any of those countries. You will recall that when Japan's banks became insolvent, went bankrupt, and stopped lending to the private sector, to the corporations, even to small business, it was the Japanese government that stepped in, both through the treasury, borrowing mountains of cash, and also the central bank printing mountains of cash to play the role of lender of last resort. The Italian economy is very similar to the Japanese economy. It has a very strong export sector. It has very low private debt, family debt, and it is an exporting, net exporting economy. Now, Italy, being stuck in the Eurozone, could not use the central bank. The central bank was barred from stepping in and helping the Italian business sector, and the treasury was completely constrained by the fiscal rules of the Eurozone. And this is why the median voter in Italy has been asphyxiating for 20 years. Well, you know what, Philip? After 20 years of asphyxiation, you end up with the postmodern 1930s. And remember what happened in the 1930s when the Great Depression set in. It was really very easy for a populist to address the public and blame it on the other, on the foreigner. In the 1930s, it was the Jew, it was the Gypsy. Well, now it's again the Gypsy, now it's the Syrian as well, or the Nigerian or the Ghanaian. The crisis is an economic crisis, it's a colossal mismanagement of the financial rules of the Eurozone that has led to a 1930s-like environment in which populists know very well how to exploit.
Last week, the president tried to prevent the new coalition taking power by appointing this former IMF bureaucrat as PM. You branded this disastrous, a gift to the far right.
Well, it was. It was. Think about it. After so many years of tolerating all sorts of establishment governments, the Italians had had enough and voted for a majority in parliament of the populists, not because they wanted the populists, but because they had had enough of so-called technocratic governments doing precisely the opposite of that which the population wanted, of imposing austerity upon a population that understood very well that austerity cannot work. So what did President Mattarella end up doing when he vetoed the formation of the government initially? He took an apparatchik, a functionary, Carlo Cottarelli, who's actually quite a nice man, I know him personally, but that's not the point. The point is that he was working for the International Monetary Fund, and he gave him a mandate to continue imposing upon the population the very same austerity politics that a majority, a clear majority of the population rejected. Now, that is a fantastic gift to the ultra-right, because Mr. Salvini, the head of the Northern League, the ultra-right-wing, xenophobic, and anti-European political party that is emerging as a kingmaker in Italian politics, and who is the major force now in this new government. This gentleman couldn't believe his luck that the president of the republic would prevent him from forming a government, would give a mandate to another functionary from the IMF, because this gave this xenophobe the opportunity for the first time to present himself not as the agent of xenophobia, but as the defender of democracy. When the establishment turns the greatest racist that has ever threatened to form government in Italy into a defender of democracy, you know that this is an own goal.
One of the reasons Il Presidente gave for not approving the coalition government was that the proposed finance minister was against the Eurozone, whereupon, once again you become part of the story, Janos, the German media dubbed him the Italian Varoufakis.
That's cute, isn't it? Look, Mr. Savona is an 81-year-old man. He was eminently qualified to be the finance minister. He would not have been my choice. He had been a finance minister and a minister of previous governments in the 1990s. And if you read his comments on the euro, you called him an anti-Eurozone, anti-EU politician, as did the German media. If you read his comments, they were not much different to what Emmanuel Macron has said. Just like Emmanuel Macron, Mr. Savona, in articles, has actually said the obvious, that which every economist in the world knows, that this Eurozone, with this particular set of rules, is simply not sustainable, and that it was a mistake to enter the Eurozone given those rules. So it seems to me that Mr. Mattarella, the president of the Republic, was saying that anybody who has some common sense is barred from being the finance minister. But what was also very interesting, Philip, was that the president, in the press conference in which he announced that he's blocking Mr. Savona from being the finance minister, he gave a very interesting explanation of why he's doing that. He said that he feels, as the president of the republic, that he has to take into consideration and look after the interests of investors. This is fascinating, isn't it? Suddenly, the president of the republic doesn't care about the interests of voters and of citizens, but the interests of the investors. But let me tell you why he got his comeuppance, and in the end, he had to consent to the formation of this government. Next day, the interest rates on Italian bonds shot up. So the markets did not see his intervention as therapeutic, as something that was looking after their interests. So he failed even by his own criteria, the president of the Italian Republic.
Yanis Varoufakis is on the program. You have recently connected Trump's trade war on Europe with the problems we've been discussing, and you make the point that the Europeans, and especially Germany, should have been more prepared.
Donald Trump is a highly problematic human person, human being, even though I know that
I think that's challenged. I think that's a bit problematic.
Yes. But nevertheless, he's not dumb. He understands one thing, and he understands it well, that you cannot lose a trade war if you have a trade deficit, and you cannot win a trade war if you have a trade surplus. Germany has an 8% of GDP trade surplus to the rest of the world and a massive trade surplus towards the United States. So he knows that challenging the European Union in the way that he's doing with tariffs and with the withdrawal from the Iran deal, which, of course, has many layers, but one important advantage from Trump's perspective of removing the United States from this Iranian deal was that it was a splendid opportunity for him to rub Mrs. Merkel's nose and face into her own helplessness and powerlessness. Because you will recall the day after, Mrs. Merkel came out and announced that Germany would nevertheless stick to the Iranian deal and that German companies would also remain within the Iranian economy. 10 minutes later, every single German company or corporation came out and declared that, no, we are pulling out because they prefer to receive the corporate tax cuts that Mr. Trump is giving them in the United States than to continue to meddle with Iran when Trump is turning against it. So, come to think of it, there is a profound difference between what's happening today and what's happening in the early 70s. In the early 70s, there was another administration, remember Richard Nixon, who turned against Europe. Indeed, the Treasury Secretary of Richard Nixon, a certain Texan, you may recall him. He was a very colorful Treasury Secretary. His name was John Connolly. He visited Europe and announced that they can no longer have the dollar, effectively, and he used the inimitable expression, the dollar is our currency, but it is your problem, addressing the European leaders. So aggression from Washington towards Europe is not a new thing. What is a new thing is that this aggression is finding the Europeans completely divided. And why are the Europeans completely divided? Because Berlin and Paris are at loggerheads. Berlin and Rome at loggerheads. And why are they at loggerheads? Because Mrs. Merkel and the establishment in Berlin, also in other surplus countries like the Netherlands and so on, are refusing to create a kind of federation out of the Eurozone.
A yarn with Yanis. Yanis, great to have you back. Yanis Varoufakis, former Greek finance minister, co-founder of the Democracy in Europe movement, and we must have you back soon to discuss that extraordinary outfit.